You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here he comes. Here he comes.
Harper exploding late in the round.
Here he comes. Oh, boy.
One more time. Harper, you want a thrill. He's your guy in D.C.
That, of course, Bryce Harper winning the Home Run Derby last night at Nationals Park. And we wanted to get into it with you at 800-636-1067 on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Listener Lines. So Bryce wins the Home Run Derby, and after he has a little interview there with Buster Olney, can we play the clip of Bryce right after winning? I found myself liking Bryce a little bit more. And I know he's been in town for years, and Nationals fans have been rooting for him for years.
Yeah.
Lately, maybe a little turn. Some people anticipating him leaving. Of course, his struggles at the plate hitting, you know, around 215.
Right.
But I found myself moved, and actually, even though I know it probably means nothing, I found myself starting to believe maybe he will stay in D.C. Maybe it's not fait accompli that he goes to the Yankees or Cubs or Phillies or wherever.
Even though he addressed it right before the game.
He did.
Right.
And I know the logical part of my brain says it means absolutely nothing.
Don't get swept
up in
the emotion.
And I know guys will say something and then bounce the next day for the highest contract offer out there. But he really did seem to show DC pride, and he did seem to have like this connection with the fans. He lauded the fans.
It's the first time I've heard him
and so
publicly laud the fans.
Kind of was
that
buying
way.
In. If you want to chime in, 800-636-1067. Are you buying into that? And then the second part of the question is, do you think this could springboard Harper to get hot in the second half?
I don't think it has anything to do with how he does in the second half.
And I would say anytime a guy plays 7 years in a city, I would think he's got a connection to the fans.
I would think so, too, but he doesn't often talk about it.
True, he's very private about that, but I would think that anybody in any sport plays 7 years in one city probably feels a connection to the fans.
I agree.
Now, that doesn't really mean anything when it comes to contract negotiations.
Right.
But, I mean, look, it was an emotional moment. He felt good. It was a big accomplishment. There was a lot of pressure for him to do well. He wouldn't have been in this contest if it wasn't held in Nats Park.
He rarely emotes like that.
Yeah. So, but he was pumped up, man. He felt good. He felt good about
his dad. It was awesome. It was a great moment. 800-636-1067. You can call us on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Listener Lines. Do we have Bryce right after with Buster Olney?
Tell me about what happened in that last minute. You're running out of time. What was the emotion going through your brain?
I better figure it out or I'm going to lose. So just try to hit the ball to the fence, and I did that. It was nice.
Only the third player to win in front of your home crowd. How much did that mean?
Unbelievable. I freaking love this crowd. Every single night they come out and support us. Washington Nationals, baby. Let's go.
When do you hear him like that?
Never. You don't hear that.
I'm with you, JP. I'm with you.
That is a different side of Bryce Harper.
Yeah, he's actually showing some human emotion.
But I think he's normally just a robot. Really pumped up. I don't think he's saying that because he wishes he's in D.C. for the next 10 years. I think he's really pumped up about what he just did.
I can tell you this personally.
I agree.
Cakes and I interviewed him at spring training 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago.
Well, it was awkward all the way around. I'm not going to blame Bryce for that.
Interested.
Do you want to hear?
It was fine, but every cliche in the book.
Yeah. Do you want to hear him like on the podium post round where he?
Sure.
Everyone's saying he got a little emotional.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, I've been here since I was 17 years old. You know, it's something that I've grown in front of these fans. I've grown in front of the media and. These people and everybody that, has a say in it or has a job here. I think outside the game, I think you guys got a gist of how I feel on a daily basis of having fun and enjoying, this game and things like that. I'm very serious on the field. I am. I'm a very serious player. I enjoy the game. I want to win. every single game that I play. I want to do everything I can to help this team win on a daily basis. So you guys see that. But off the field, outside, and everything like that, that's the kid in me that you guys saw tonight.
And I believe that. I believe he wants to win every game. I also think he's maturing. I think he's maturing as a person. We're seeing
I found
that.
Him more likable.
Yeah, so we're seeing that.
And maybe that's silly, but I found him more likable after yesterday.
I like it. I like how you're a sucker for when guys just have a weak moment.
Sure.
Because I was that way with Kirk.
Now, here's the question.
I like that you're falling into the trap.
Here's the question.
But I admit, I know it's a trap.
Yeah.
Ricardo's.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because you three are Ricardo's, all three of you.
So are you.
On a lesser scale. What does that mean going into the second half when they play Atlanta? They go to Milwaukee.
What, his comments? What do they mean?
No, no, what he did. And then going to Miami and then playing the Mets in Cincinnati.
Probably doesn't mean much, but maybe for
that's
the first
the
game.
That's the question.
But probably for the first game or two. I would think a performance like that would give you a little lift. Now, as soon as you go for four with three Ks, it goes out the window.
Well, when he strikes out against Chris Sale in the second inning, it might not mean much.
I'm gonna say the All-Star Game's a goof. And even though the Home Run Derby's a big goof, I think there could be some positive momentum for a day or two.
Maybe a little bit, but I think it carries very little impact going
forward. I think it carries little impact. I do think due theory is more in play.
The due theory
is
so big.
Beyond due. At some point, he's going to have a week where he hits five home runs. And in that week, they're going to win five or six games.
I think it's a good, more than anything, it's a good reminder for the fans of how talented this guy is.
Didn't he hit 10 home runs in May?
He did.
Yes.
And then he hit eight. No.
I think it was
10, eight, and then like two, and whatever he's got now.
Right. So he's going to have
something like that.
You know, power wise, as he
no,
said.
No, in April he hit 10. May, I think he hit eight.
Whichever
June,
month it was.
I think he hit like two or four or something.
Bottom line is he had a month, whichever month it was, where he hit 10 home runs. He's capable of doing that. And when that happens, the team tends to win more games than not.
Agreed.
So he's going to have a week where he hits five and they win six or seven games. They go on a little bit of a streak. You know, the question is going to be, is it going to be enough? Is it going to be enough to get them into the postseason? So I think his second half is going to be better. Just law of averages.
Right.
Better in terms of, you mean his
batting
average?
Yeah.
You know, but don't you?
By the way, it's not a half. It's like a third of the season left. Because they've
there's
played
66 games left.
96 games or whatever it is. 48-48. So he's not going to hit 23 home runs in the second half?
Yeah, he had 8 in April, 10 in May.
But he's going to hit roughly 40 home runs this season.
Roughly,
and I think his average will probably end up around 250. He's not a 215 hitter.
No.
And he's
really,
not a 330 hitter.
He really
either.
Is a better than a 250 hitter, too.
Right.
He's probably about a 270, 280 hitter.
Right.
That's about where he looks like.
Yes.
He
but other guys got to step up, too, man.
No question.
Strasburg's got to have a big second half.
But maybe the fans aren't moved. Our phone lines aren't moved.
Yeah, well, they don't care.
The middle of July. I mean,
they're sleeping in. They were all at the home
run
derby last night.
I was impressed not just by the attendance, but just so many people that you have to believe weren't going to be able to go to the home run derby. They were at the bars, at the restaurants, just walking around. When we were walking around last night. The
place was packed.
The city was popped.
It was a mob scene last night.
Whether it was the Play Ball
DC.
Park.
Well,
or
it's an event.
Every restaurant that I walked by.
People feel like they got to be there.
Right. I just know, again, for me as a fan, it was good to be reminded that, man, okay, sure, it's his dad, and he's serving up his cake, says 50-mile-an-hour meatballs. But it's good to be reminded, man, this guy's really had special power. And,
yeah.
You know, he get hot on a hot streak like he did there in the last 47 seconds when he hit 9 bombs. You know, kind of extrapolate that over a month, like you say, where he could hit 10 or 12 bombs and carry the team. He's capable of that. We kind of needed that reminder.
He's a different level player. And I don't remember if it was Cal who said this yesterday, but he has that type of attitude. Every room he walks into, he's the best player.
Yeah, I do.
And he has that type of ability.
Yes. And I personally needed that reminder after watching him hit 188 in June and whatever he's hitting in July.
Yeah, well, we've seen 4 strikeout games this year.
Yeah.
They're just dud games from Bryce.
Yeah. Well, let's see how he comes out of the gate. Second half.
Well,
I mean, you played 6 really tough games, Atlanta,
I'm not
Milwaukee.
As optimistic as I try to be on air. On air, I'm trying to take a neutral, 60 games left, whatever it is, plenty of time.
I know. I know how you really feel.
But if you asked me yesterday while we're having beers, I'd say it just looks like it's not their year.
Right.
I don't know what to tell you.
That's the way you really feel, genuinely feel.
But there also is plenty of time. I heard Grant and Danny even talking about it yesterday. You know, they play the Braves soon, right?
When that's the first Friday, series out of the break.
Friday,
what if,
Saturday,
they, if they sweep the Braves, boom, they're right there. Now, it's unlikely, but if they, it's right, it's in their
Except
hands.
For the Phillies factor.
Okay,
but you
because
have to,
you may have to win the division if the wild card is, you know, going to be tougher to get.
No, but his point is, you start winning consistently,
start winning,
you're going to gain games.
What did they play the Braves for, 3 games?
Yeah,
I mean, they can certainly win three games.
But
in a row.
Truth is, of course they can. That we thought that they would really take advantage of the easy part of the schedule with the Marlins and Mets in there.
They couldn't.
They went 500.
How does Max starting affect the rotation? Are they going to like push him back a little bit? Like, how's this all going to affect everything?
I bet you, I would assume he pitches Saturday or Sunday. Maybe Strasburg pitches
Friday.
But
he won't be the first one out.
I think it's undecided as to who's pitching.
In other words,
we're going to
pitch him one inning. He'll pitch one inning
tops,
right?
They might consider this as his the day that they pitch in between.
So then he won't miss a start.
I don't know. I would guess he pitches Friday.
I have no idea who's going to. I mean, I would think Strasburg
because
and Strasburg
against the Braves,
and Max both pitch in
you
that
wanna
series.
You want to have Strauss. You want to have Max, obviously. And I guess at this point, you might even want to have Hellickson over Gio. I'm not sure.
Definitely over Tanner.
Maybe.
Definitely over Tanner, who I love Tanner, but for whatever reason, it ain't happening this year.
No.
For whatever reason.
I don't know. I mean, maybe you throw Gio because the Braves got some pretty good lefties, but who knows?
Jason,
I would definitely Max and definitely Strauss, you're going to pitch in that series.
You got your Sports Illustrated ready?
Yeah, is he here?
Steve Garvey's here. Great Steve Garvey, 10-time All-Star,
Sweet.
MVP in Major League Baseball in 1974.
I hope
he won a whole season in 1984 with no errors.
I hope he charged you $50 for his autograph.
Played.
Well, I'm not going to. I'll just give it back to Drabby.
Has the National League record for consecutive games played. He's going to join us next in studio here on The Fan.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the show, Junkies on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington, where you can see our next guest in studio with the Junks is baseball legend Steve Garvey, 10-time All-Star, 1974 NL MVP, won 4 gold gloves. And what I really respect about him outside of all that is the man travels with the product that he's pimping.
Look at that.
King's Hawaiian. Steve Garvey is the spokesman for that. He's got the rolls. He's got the,
barbecue sauce,
which looks delicious. Smoked bacon flavored barbecue sauce.
I got to get some of that.
How good does that sound?
Oh, you'll
it's
get
Steve
some of
Garvey.
That. Don't worry.
Oh, I will.
Welcome.
Well, this is how we roll.
I guess so.
I definitely order those rolls.
You know what?
100% chance my family buys those.
I'm going to grill out tonight, throw some chicken on the grill.
Is there there's not some stuff out there, is there?
Well, there's that.
Oh, we're just going to take
this. Yeah, they bring like sandwiches
okay,
prepared.
So we can't
for you.
Bring the meat and fish.
Yeah, yeah, we got everything else for you.
Right. But this, we were just starting about talking a few minutes ago about how I got involved with Kings and Hawaiian. Let's do it up front. And I do a lot of motivational speaking. I have a media consulting company, and I've had a lot of great clients. I never thought I'd have a dog food company, an Indian gaming casino, and a bread company.
Oh,
and
nice. Indian gaming casino? Now I'm
you just
really
turned them on. Completely
intrigued.
Come see us out there in Southern California.
Ooh,
they're
that,
in a neighborhood
Kings.
By you.
Very nice.
But Kings Hawaiian has been just great.
Yeah.
I was trying
favorite.
To figure this out. I'm going to make this somewhat awkward. What I remember from you as a player, okay, we were all born in 1970.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So when I first started watching baseball, Yankees, Dodgers, World Series, you guys won a World Series in 1981. It was a great era, Tommy Lasorda, all that stuff. But you had monstrous forearms.
Yep.
And I was just almost trying to see like what they're
like.
Still
looks like
jacket.
You still got.
Were you
still
peeking a little bit, trying to look at my sleeve?
I was looking at it, but you have a jacket.
Check,
on.
Please. I got to go on.
Were you just born?
I played. I was born. My mother said
Popeye.
It was easy until the forearms started to come out. But I played football and baseball, and
that's right.
A little basketball in high school to balance things out, but ended up at Michigan State playing both, and
for
Duffy Daugherty and those great teams, and 60.
You played both at Michigan State.
I did.
Yeah. Stud.
Yeah. Dude,
you're from Florida, though. Were you raised
from Tampa? Yeah. A family from New York. It's a much longer story, but I was born in Tampa, and great sports down there in Sun Belt, and ended up being a quarterback on a big, you know, 5A team and playing baseball, drafted first pick in the third round out of high school by the Twins. But I really wanted to go to college and play two sports. And I had about 20 offers, you know, yeah. Auburn and Miami and Florida. But that was the beginning of kind of a single sport emphasis. So our pitching coach at Tampa Chamberlain had gone to Florida State, and Danny Littweiler, an old outfielder for the Cardinals, coach there, went to Michigan State, and he said, I've got this kid that, you know, is going to go high in a draft for a high school player, but he wants to play two sports. So I went up there and took us into the venerable old field house and looking at the trophies, and all of a sudden I get a tap on the shoulder, and it's Duffy Daugherty, the great old Irish coach, and he says, son, he said, I heard you play a little football too. And I said, yes, sir, I do. He says, well, you can play both here.
Oh.
And we got 23,000 co-eds. You're going to get a date on Friday night, no matter what. So, yeah,
sounds
I wasn't struggling, but you know, you like the odds on that. Yeah. And it was a great choice. You know, I mean, playing football in Florida, or maybe here, you lose 6, 7, 8 pounds a game because of humidity and heat. And
right.
Went up there, and the Four Seasons was great.
Did you play first base in high school as well?
No, I was actually a third baseman. You know, kids coming up, who are the better players, athletes? They pitch and play short normally. And then I went to third, and Michigan State, I was a third baseman. And my freshman spring, you had to play, it was freshman baseball then. If you wanted to play football that fall, you had to do spring football. So I would, you know, baseball Monday and Friday, doubleheader Friday. First game of a doubleheader on Saturday, I play that, done by two, go over, get dressed, and play in the scrimmage.
Do you think it's a disservice to kids growing up who are good athletes that it's become so specialized? So let's take Bryce Harper,
sure,
who wins the home run derby last night. Incredible baseball talent. I'm guessing he didn't really play many. I mean, he probably played a little bit.
Actually, Bryce played for me and for a couple tournaments, and we know the family well. And we talk about that a lot because he could have been a heck of a tight end.
Yeah, or linebacker.
I mean, a quarterback that throws 92 at, you know, 15, that's not bad either.
Right.
But probably because of his size. But, he showed that ultimate talent at a young age. Dominated 11, 12, 13, 14. So that was kind of the beginning.
So you coached him?
Teams. Yeah, I had him for a couple of
that's
tournaments.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah,
well, that's great.
I had this traveling team with my son Ryan. We got 5 girls and 2 boys, and God blessed us finally with testosterone at the end with the two guys. And great traveling. 8 of the boys on our team were drafted.
Wow.
What
please
team.
Tell me Bryce, that Bryce was the cleanup hitter at least.
No, you don't want him batting that far down. You know, I batted him first. I wanted him to hit as often as possible.
Nice.
First, you
know?
Which is not a bad flaw. You see that sometimes. Yeah. I mean, he's been who would think he's a number two hitter?
Right.
Put him there sometimes.
Yeah. Was he a good catcher?
Oh, yeah.
He was.
Actually a better catcher than anything else. Yeah.
Really?
But you don't want
it. Was just too much wear and tear.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You don't want
do
bending
that.
Down and knees and all that stuff. But his pop time was ridiculous, like 1.6, 1.7. And that was basically a high school kid.
Right.
What is that? Throw to second?
Yeah. It's a time in transition there. But his quickness and release and all that. I mean,
stud athlete.
But you want to preserve him for as long as
was
possible.
Was he the best player you ever coached then when you were doing that? When you were coaching youth baseball?
Yeah.
Not even close.
I've had a lot of kids that, you know, are high AAA, some, you know, have gotten into the majors and so forth. But he was that clear, you know, prodigal son.
How do you make sense of his struggles this year? I mean, the power numbers are there, and he's walking a lot, but still, like, the low average and that sort of thing. And I know, baseball's a difficult game, and, you know, you struggle, but how do you make sense of it?
Remember this one thing. Baseball is the only sport where they can take the ball away from you, or they don't have to let you play with the ball, which means that you never want the best player, and I received this compliment a few times from Steinbrenner when we played the Yankees. Garvey's not going to beat us, which meant they would pitch around me. And they do that a lot to Bryce. They'll show him a fastball on the first pitch, and then you'll see breaking ball and balls away. Because who's the guy that you'd rather pitch to than him? I mean, the guy behind him, right?
Right, right.
I mean, put anybody. Murphy when he's hot, or Zimmerman, or any of these guys. You'd still rather pitch to them than to Bryce.
Yeah, I agree.
Right?
I mean, he's just not seeing a lot of pitches.
No, but and I think it all started, well, obviously, you win the MVP, and now you're really on the radar every day. And it was Chicago, was it last year when he went there? And
they walked him 7 times or something?
Yeah.
That was 2 years ago, I think. It was 2 years ago when they did that.
Yeah. But if you noticed after that, and I was always the same way. I was hitting, 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 and he's the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to go up and hit. We don't necessarily want to walk. We'll take a walk. But he got frustrated, and if you look at that period afterwards, we started to go out of his strike zone a little bit. Then you swing at pitches that, you know, you shouldn't have. You get yourself in a deep slump. Then they pitch around you again. And when that happens, you got to stay within yourself, take your walks, and it's tough for the ultimate power hitter.
Did you bat mostly third for the Dodgers?
Third and fourth.
You were third and fourth.
Yeah.
Who was if you batted third, who was fourth? Dusty fourth or
Dusty Ronsay. We had Reggie Smith in there too.
Yeah, you had a stacked lineup.
And he had Lopes leading off, and Billy Russell was a great number two and number eight hitter.
Right.
So we had quite the lineup going down.
Had a great lineup.
And even Yeager at 230, 240, still pop one out.
You know? Right. So you played in five World Series. Let's talk about your career a little bit. You played in five World Series. You won the 81, like JP said.
Yeah.
You know, and I know you've been asked about the Hall of Fame a million times. I watched you, you know, I was 11, 12, 13 when you were in your prime, but I think you're a Hall of Fame player. You were an unbelievable hitter because you had the combination of power and average. You had six 200 hit seasons.
And you're sleeping on the gold gloves.
Stud first baseman. I mean, it was just really, really good. Does that bother you? Does that still, maybe the home run totals, you know, if you were playing now, you'd have the home runs because the year is so much different. But do you think that's what kept you out, the home runs? Or what do you think it was?
I don't know. You know, I mean, think about it. Look at my career. First of all, you have to look at it. It's kind of a body of work.
Right.
Not 3,000 hits, not 500 home runs. But if you start to add up consecutive game streak, National League, you know, all-time number four, gold gloves, errorless season, I think I'm number two. And
10 All-Stars game. To me tells me you're one
games.
Of the best players at your position
for 10 years.
And went all 10, by the way, I got a record. I mean, if you look at my All-Star career, arguably it's the greatest in history, and I hate to toot it.
Well, you're two-time MVP, right?
But I'm 69. Nice. I don't care what anybody thinks. Go to the numbers.
I love it.
10-0. You know, if you want to go OPS 12-something.
2,599 hits.
You check a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
Well, you know? it's like we had Cal in studio yesterday. It's a great week for us, you know, with everybody in town and everything. And Cal talks about Donnie Mattingly and how Mattingly's not in, but Mattingly was in, what I think he said, 10 All-Star games also.
I think it was a little bit less than
maybe,
that.
Maybe, but he said every year he batted fourth. When you bat up cleanup every year and you're in an All-Star game, it tells you pretty damn good.
A nice compliment, isn't it?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Everybody else knows. Yeah, the managers, the people that need to know, people in the inner circle manage, they bat you certain place.
I mean, I'm sure you're over it, but you know, I just it kind of sucks when you see a player that was so good as you were for so many years and it's just not recognized at the end of your career. But you know,
well, great Steve Garvey is joining us. He won the MVP in 1974 and he played in, as he said, the consecutive game streak, 1,207 games in a row. Were you blown away when Cal just took it to an entirely different level? Like, talk about your streak and what it took to play in so many games in a row.
Well, you know, we're good friends, and in the winters we used to have a place up in Deer Valley and sit down at Stein Erickson Lodge, and we had the most consecutive games of any table in history, that's for sure.
Right.
And you have to have done it to understand what it took. I had migraine headaches and flu and hamstrings and hyperextended elbow and fracture and days where you just don't feel like it, right?
Right.
But you have a passion for the game. You love the game. Contracts is 162 championship games. And by the time you get traction, it took me a couple years. I was a wild arm third baseman, gotten a shoulder separation in football. And all of a sudden, now 73, I'm a wild arm third baseman. And June 23rd, I'm pinch hitting well. And Walter Alston comes by me in the middle of a doubleheader and says, "You ever play first?" I said, "Oh, sure." I played one game in Little League and one in AAA, you know, in bad hamstring. And he said, "Grab a glove, play first tonight. We're struggling against lefties." So that night I went out, dug a ball out, first inning, got a couple of doubles, RBIs, won the game. And those days, you know, where it all comes together. And
whose glove did you use? Because you probably didn't have a first base glove.
No, it was a flopper. You know,
right.
I don't know how it worked. And I'm sitting there after the game and feeling pretty good. Won the game. And I see Alston at the corner of my eye. I had come up the tunnel, was walking by, and didn't stop. And I heard... "You're in there tomorrow." And I looked at Steve Yeager yesterday. I said, "Who's he talking? He's talking to you or me?" And he said, "I think he's talking to you, Gar." And started the next day. But that was the beginning, really, of my career and being a first baseman the next 15 and a half years. And I do a lot of motivational speaking. I always say, if I had said no, probably wouldn't be with you guys today.
Mm.
But because they said yes, and that carpe diem, and seized the money, in the moment, yeah, I can do it, and went out there. And you know what? Just happened to have a God-given talent to digging balls out of the dirt and being athletic, being a defensive back, and parlayed that into pretty neat career and gold gloves. And but I always talk about it. Seize the moment. Take it. You know, boss says, can you do this? Absolutely. Yeah. JP, can you do the show yourself? Absolutely.
Right.
Did you hate the Yankees?
No, I didn't hate the Yankees. And parents are from New York. Quick story, we got a minute?
Oh, yeah.
1956, I'm a kid growing up in Tampa. Dad and two other gentlemen just started the Little League, second Little League in Tampa. And it was about March 28th. And I know the date because my wife and I did a little book on this. And Dad comes home and he says, you want to skip school tomorrow? He's a Greyhound bus driver. I said, yeah, why? He said, well, I got a charter to pick up the Brooklyn Dodgers from the Tampa airport, take them to St. Pete to play the Yankees in an exhibition game. And he said, I think it might be a fun day for you and I tomorrow. So my mom was a Yankee fan. She gloated every year. But Dad was a Dodger fan. And the Dodgers had beaten the dreaded Yankees for the first time the fall before, 55.
Okay.
So the next day we get the bus. We drive to the tarmac of Tampa Airport at about 8:15. The Kay O'Malley one lands, the Dodger plane, only team ever playing. Dodgers on the side. I'm a little kid with a flat top. And I got my Topps cards. I just started collecting. I had six Dodgers. And the plane pulls up and off comes Alston and Reese and Hodges and Snyder and Ferrello and Robinson and Campanella. And they're going by, and I got my cards. My wife did a book. That was my first day at Bat Boy. And I said it was as if these guys walked off that card that day. Because as a little kid, you finally see, you know, guys that you admire and know. And I Bat Boyed that day and literally had Jackie Robinson sit on my lap. He didn't see me and sat on me. He said, oh, I'm sorry, son. I said, oh, that's okay, Mr. Robinson. I'm thinking show and tell on Monday. Nobody's going to believe that Jackie Robinson
sat on you, right?
And that was the beginning that night of dreaming and falling in love with baseball and kind of being a Dodger. And the next 10, 11 years, I got a chance to bat boy in the spring until I got to high school and so forth. And so I had an appreciation for this Yankee-Dodger rivalry in the boroughs. And, well, back then, almost every fall, you'd rush home from school, and it was Yankees and Dodgers. You know, I saw the great perfect game that was thrown with
Larson. Yep.
So by the time I reached the Dodgers, for me, and because of understanding history, that first Yankee Dodger game in 1977 was a dream come true.
That must have been crazy.
Yeah. Well, start off by Ella Fitzgerald singing the national anthem and taking 4.5 minutes to sing the national anthem. It was a performance at a jazz stage. And, Yankee fans, about a minute and a half into it, they're ready for the game. They're yelling. They're eventually booing this great singer.
Right. And I just want the game to start.
Yeah. And 77 was pretty much of an iconic series. You remember the ESPN, The Bronx is Burning, and that series?
Right.
And, of course, Reggie's final, three home runs. And
I mean, there was such a rival.
And he stuck out his hip. The great play where he deflects the ball with his hip. I mean, a Yankee-Dodger World Series always spawned something.
Right. You didn't hate him.
Yeah. No, you don't
hate. You just respected him.
Yes. Yeah. You have to respect iconic franchises and players, and especially when you're part of one, too, and you have a chance to play together. Because arguably, Dodgers-Yankees is the greatest World Series.
Did you feel like you were the better team those years? Sorry, I know we got to go to break.
77. Yeah, 77 for sure. 78, marginally, 81. Obviously
definitely.
When we come back, I have a great little addendum to that, three home runs.
All right, the great Steve Garvey's hanging out with us. Won the Kings MVP Hawaiian. In 1974. He is pimping Kings Hawaiian now. When we come back, though, look, we're talking about your Dodger career. You went to the World Series with the Padres. You changed teams. And we can get back to kind of Bryce Harper, because that's the big topic here in D.C. with the All-Star game here, is what's going to happen with Bryce in the offseason. So we'll talk more with Steve Garvey here on the Junkies.
Welcome back to the show, Junkies on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. We're joined in studio by legendary MLB-er Steve Garvey. Should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Should get there one day. But he is joining us. He's here for the All-Star Game, and he's here to also spread the word about Kings Hawaiian, and especially Kings Hawaiian Grill, the concept that was launched at Dodger Stadium last season. It was so successful, it's now been expanded to Yankee Stadium, and there are other
spots being looked at
for more Kings Hawaiian Grills in the future, and Steve Garvey's the mastermind behind it.
He is.
We do grilling with a Garv at Dodger Stadium.
That's a perfect name, right? That's a great name.
The chefs from Kings Hawaiian and Dodger Stadium, and each of the chefs at the stadium create their own menus. But we use the barbecue pulled pork with our four sauces and tri-tip, and we've got wings in Dodger Stadium. We have lobster rolls now, so we're taking the idea of stadium food to another.
All right,
level.
Let me ask. How's your grilling game? Grilling with Garv. If I'm going to put this delicious barbecue sauce, smoked bacon, it sounds awesome, on my chicken, do I do it like halfway through the grilling or right at the beginning of the grilling process? I'm a little bit of a rookie when it comes to grilling.
I would
chicken.
Actually marinate the chicken before, right? Probably that's, a few hours.
That's the move.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd do 2 to 3
hours. You can slap it on, but if you want it to really taste good and you want to sink in,
get in.
You got to marinate it.
You want to take your game up a little higher?
I do. I need to.
Right.
Marinate it. Okay.
Right, so real quick, I'm sorry. I know you want to get into the Bryce thing. Playing in L.A. for so many years, you had to become friends with some Hollywood actors.
Sure.
So can you give us a few names, like how those relationships started? Are you still tight with these people? When you're in L.A., you're probably seeing people in the stands.
The guys or the girls? Which one are you talking about?
Let's go with girls.
Okay. All right. Candace might be listening, my wonderful wife.
All right, so how about guys?
How many times did you visit the Playboy Mansion?
Was that one of your spots?
A few.
Who wouldn't?
You mean Hugh? Yeah, it was quite interesting there. But
did it live up to the hype?
I'm 69. I can't remember anymore.
Yeah, right.
That usually
happens. What did I have for breakfast and what happened to the mansion?
I have a question for you. Let's just go back to those days for a moment. Like, toughest pitcher you ever faced?
And when I speak, that's always one of the first three questions.
Yeah.
And I faced, I think, 14 Hall of Famers and some guys that it probably should be. And, Seaver and Marichal and Gibson and all these guys.
Ryan.
But I always say Phil Niekro, because I was a guesstimator. I would look at sequences, and catchers and pitchers have ways of pitching guys. But with Niekro,
you didn't know where it was going to go with the knuckleball.
He didn't know where it was going. Yeah. Catcher didn't know where it was going. You're supposed to hit it. So it's a bad equation right there. Plus,
it seems so slow.
It is.
We watched on
it
TV.
Is slow.
It was slower. Well, you got to remember, it's all about wind resistance and even humidity. Would have been very difficult here to pitch, heavy air. And they're the only kind of pitcher that likes wind blowing out, because you take a ball that doesn't spin into the wind, it makes it dance even more. So that's why Phil was very effective in Atlanta.
Was he good at, if you just took pitches, was he good at throwing strikes for? Or was he just relying on you guys just swinging and missing?
Well, he had mastered getting it around the zone somewhere.
Right.
And I was a contact hitter and went the other way. And there was one night I had never struck out three times in a game, and six pitches, two strikeouts, missed a couple, took some balls. I could have swore outside of it. And now I've got I'm 0-2 on my third at bat. So I get into my emergency stance. I'm spread out. I'm leaning over the plate. And I'm thinking, if he just hits me, it's great. I'm going to consider it a hit. Putting it in my column. And he throws a pitch that's clearly foot and a half outside, and it all of a sudden starts to break back. And I do the emergency flip the bat, get on top of it. It's going down the third baseline, and we're at home. And I'm taking off. I'm running hard. And I hit the bag in my great sprinter stride, and I hear a cheer, which means good news. Right? So I look around, the ball died on the chalk about 65 feet down.
Oh, wow.
And Manny Mota, the great, great coach in Dominican, played for me. I get to first base, and he puts his arm around me, looks at me, goes, "Steve." I said, "Yeah, Manny, you are a very lucky man. You very, very lucky man." I said, "Thank you, Manny." So I was 1-for-3.
So great. Niekro was the one guy that you always
saw. Who was the most talented player that you ever saw during your career?
I usually get the best player, competitor. Mm-hmm. Most talented player is an interesting one, because it varies a little bit with your perspective of if a guy's a five-tool player or not. But the best competitor, day in, day out, pitch in, pitch out, was Pete Rose.
Mm.
Because if you have a boy or a girl that's playing sports, and to take them to see somebody who epitomizes being a professional on the field, on the court, and giving you 100% on every play, would have been Pete.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And obviously we know Pete and we know his history and so forth, but Pete on the field was a great example.
And that was
invariably every young baseball player would say the same. They watch Pete. Yeah. That's how you play the game.
And that's what Bryce said from day one. Ironically, this week he didn't run out a double play ball, and his answer, he was kind of quick to the media when they asked him about it, was, "Well, I hit the ball 108 miles an hour." And
Let's talk about Bryce a little bit further.
Sure.
Number one, let's talk about your move to San Diego and how you might compare that to Bryce. Because a lot of fans, I think, are bracing themselves.
Right.
They're already kind of feeling hurt that he may leave.
Yeah.
Which will be a business decision, I'm sure. He's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars. What was it like for you? Because I identify you as a Dodger. I know you did play a bunch of years with the Padres. Yeah. Took them to the World Series.
Yeah.
We're part of a World Series team with the Padres. But you're a Dodger in my mind.
Yeah.
What's it going to be like for Bryce, you think?
Well, who would have thought I'd never be anything but a Dodger? My 6-year contract's up in 82. We had already gone to, 4 World Series, World Championship.
Just by comparison, what was that 6-year deal worth?
Oh, the 6-year deal was for...
Was it 20 million? Was it less? 15?
Oh, it was probably a million.
Million per?
Million eight.
Okay, so about
12. Altogether.
Yeah,
no, altogether.
Oh, no way. 6 years, 1.8? Yeah.
Things didn't start to really expand until the late
80s. Wow.
Cable television, you guys know this, is the reason for all this great economics and sports. And I never got to by my last year where I was 1.4, and then within 2 or 3 years it was 3, 4, 5, and it took off because of the expansion of cable television.
Uh-huh.
So all I wanted was parity. Another 5 years, I was in a consecutive game streak. I was about 1,200 games at the time. I was 34. 34 is a lot younger, back then than it is now. And they started to play horrible. And I said, wait a minute, I was a bat boy at the age of 7, and I've been with you all this time. And I epitomized what you want, a Dodger family. And all I want is parity of Schmidt, Brett, my contemporaries. I want to give you 3 years, give you $1 million a year. So that was free agency. I became a free agent. It was an odd free agency. 5 teams could bid on you, negotiate, and ended up in San Diego with Ray Kropp, kind of cliff top place. And he says, I just want to talk to Stevie. So we sit down, and he said, son, I want you here. You can make a difference in this town. You can teach people what winning is like. And we know how you work in the community and so forth. He said, but I got one problem. I said, what's that, sir? He said, I can only pay you in Big Macs and French fries. And he had that little impish grin. He was 84. And I said, for a lifetime? And he said, I'll find a few dollars. And his son-in-law was the president. He said, I'm going to get Jeremy, your agent, and Ballard, and get this done the next day. And he did. And ended up being 1-4 for 5 years. And I was in the top 15.
Mm.
Within 2 years, I wasn't in the top 75, and at the end of my career, I was in the top 180, 200.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
So that 5-year period was elite. But I never thought I was going to be anyplace else. And I say, they made me an offer I could refuse.
Yeah.
But this isn't the case with Bryce. He's going to be a pure – everything's changed over the last 3. He's going to be a pure free agent. I'll tell you what's changed the game almost as much. Two things. Number one, arbitration. Number two is an opt-out clause.
Right.
How can you sign a guaranteed 5-year contract? Everybody thinks the guy's going to be there for 5 years, but oh, by the way, he can opt out after 2 years.
Right.
So.
And that's what's going on with Trout. Doesn't Trout have an opt out?
Yes.
Yeah.
Players have the leverage.
Think of the free agent market this coming season. That's why the Dodgers didn't get into free agency last year because they were so far over. You get a reset if you don't get in the free agent market. So they've reset now for.
Great conversation, Steve. Appreciate the time, man. And thank you for signing the SI.
It's going
in the basement, my man.
People should know it's at Kings Hawaiian on Twitter.
Yeah.
We have some of the product here. Thank you very much for stopping by.
Steve Garvey 6 Instagram.
Look at that. He's on social media.
Millions of
them. He's all over.
Coming up next, the great LeVar Ball joins us in studio here on The Junkies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.